So most of the time when we sit down and do one of these podcasts, we have a very firm idea what the podcast is going to be about. There's a plan. We've done some research. So with Brad Kearns, our guest today, we were going to talk to him about his new book called The Keto Reset Diet. Because everybody's into this keto thing. Half our newsroom is doing the keto thing. But then we found out that Brad had just done something bizarre.
So weird. I've never even heard of this sport, this thing. I didn't know it existed.
Didn't know there was a record for it.
Nope.
But Brad found out that there was a record for something very obscure, and he started pursuing it. And I'm going to be honest with you. We got kind of obsessed with knowing, like, why would somebody commit so hard to that? And what we discovered was it really was an analogy for his entire life, as it turned out. So in this Dying to Ask, you're going to meet Brad Kearns, the author of The Keto Reset Diet. We'll talk about keto eventually. But we're mainly going to talk about the sport of speed golf and his pursuit of a Guinness World Record. Have you ever wondered, how did they do that? I'm talking about the art of the follow-through. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and Dying to Ask is the podcast that gets me off a TV news set and into candid conversations with authors, entrepreneurs, and influencers I have been dying to talk to. So brace yourself. This is a verbal gut check about what it takes to go from idea to reality. And who knows, maybe along the way, you'll get some answers to questions you've been dying to ask. Brad Kearns is our guest, and we're thrilled to have you on the Dying to Ask podcast, a fellow podcaster.
I am so thrilled to be here. Fellow podcaster, Get Over Yourself podcast is my obsession. I'm so happy to have just started this, been doing other podcasts for several years on primal living and eating and endurance training, but now it's like free for all. Let's go.
So a big congratulations to you. You are, I believe, the first Guinness Book of World Records record holder that we've had on this podcast.
Oh my gosh, what an honor.
It's huge. It's huge. Let's talk a little bit about this incredible achievement you have pulled off.
Yes, thank you for asking. It's important to promote the great achievement that was so much fun. And I stumbled upon this Guinness World Record for the fastest single hole of golf ever played. And I didn't know it existed. I'm a speed golfer. You know that. We've talked about it, where we have these actual tournaments where you play the entire course and you carry a handful of clubs. And
so this is like the answer for anybody who says it takes too long to play a run of golf.
Mm-hmm.
If you run the course and carry the golf clubs, it doesn't take that long at all.
I play the entire round in 45 minutes in a tournament.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And
what does that look like?
Oh, it's fun. When you go to a speed golf tournament, they send you off in intervals, like a time trial on Tour de France, because you can't play with someone. You'll hit them in the head if you get one shot ahead. So you have this staggered start, and you're just blazing through the course, and it's so fast moving that you don't even have time to keep score. So you actually need a scorekeeper to drive with you in the golf cart. My girlfriend, Mia Moore, is my favorite scorekeeper, and we'll drive through the whole course, and I'll yell my score out on each hole. And then I'm on to the next hole, and I don't even remember. I just look at my scorecard and see how I did. So it's just, it puts you in this zen-like state of mind where you're just reacting to what's in front of you and racing to the next shot. So you get out of that overly analytical mindset that's so harmful to most golfers, where we're watching these guys on TV who are so precise and they spend so much time looking at, it's 147 over the water with a slight west left to right breeze, which could affect his club making decision. It's like, no. If you're not shooting in the 70s in real life, A, you probably only need 5 or 6 clubs like we use, and B, you shouldn't take a practice swing because your practice swing stinks too, just like your real swing. Just get up and hit the damn ball. And what's interesting about the speed golf tournaments is, like, most every player out there scores as good or better than a regular round with 5 hours and the potato chips and the digital yardage readout on the golf cart, just because they're loose and they're relaxed and they swing.
And they get their day back.
Oh my gosh.
We have
a speed golf tournament. Finish the tournament, eat breakfast, and everyone goes off to work. It's over. It's awesome. The best part about it.
But you took it up a notch because you discovered that there actually is a record for the fastest, let me make sure I have this right, the fastest hole of golf played, and it has to be 500 yards, right?
Right. So you can't go to like your pitch and putt par 3 and play in 30 seconds. Yeah. So the 500-yard minimum length is the key factor. And I saw this guy on YouTube, Steve Jeffs from the United Kingdom, had this wonderful viral video on the Guinness World Record site, 161,000 1,000 views, 1,000 of them are mine. So there's 160,000 real views. But this guy played this hole really quickly, just racing from shot to shot. So in the tournament, you know, we're running 5.5 miles. So I'm running at tempo pace and I'm playing the whole course. So this thing's a full out pedal to the metal, gas on sprint. And I think it's good context for your show because I studied this video and I was so cocky and arrogant about my sprinting skills and my golf skills. I thought the next morning or the next evening, I'll go out there and just bust this world record myself.
His record was what?
It was 1:50.
Okay, go out. And we'll get into your athletic background in a minute, but Brad's a former pro athlete. So so you don't come into this as, you know, somebody getting off the couch.
Yeah, and I'm ranked top 20 as a professional in speed golf. So I've taken 20th, 20th, and 19th in the last three world championships. I'm a pretty good player. My best score in speed golf tournament, 78 in 47 minutes. So that's a speed golf score of 125. You add them together.
So you go out there the next morning, and what happens?
Next evening. You have to go out. By the way, speed golf is not a social sport because if there's anyone on the golf course, you'll catch them. So I wait until right before dark. I go see my friends at Bing Maloney, Sacramento. Love those guys. And I'll go tee off at, 7:15 when it gets dark at 7:30. Hit it straight on the last few holes. But then I have an open course.
Right.
Because you imagine I'm playing, even in practice, I'm playing 9 holes in 30 minutes easily. So if there's a group on the 8th tee,
God help them,
and I'm on the first tee, I'll catch them on the 9th green because the average group plays 15 minutes a hole, 4-hour golf round. So it's a private, you're either first person off in the morning or right before dark. So I figured I'd go out to the 9th hole there, 500 yards, and just bust one out and see if I could break this world record.
Do these traditional golfers hate you?
You know, I don't want to encounter them because it's disrespecting what they're all about on the thing. For some guys racing up to you and saying, hey, get out of my way.
Right.
So you have to be super polite and respectful of real golfers. I'm not expecting everyone to embrace my crazy regimen out there. But generally, I find with golfers, they're really fascinated about what's going on. They can't believe that, I told you I'm in the 20th zone there. The winners of these tournaments will shoot par and be running the course in 40, 45, 50 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. A guy named Rob Hogan from Ireland, he's the fastest of the top players. And he played Bandon Dunes, which is one of the top rated courses in the world. The 18-hole championship course in 39 minutes and shot 77.
Wow.
My good friend Christopher
Smith.
We Irish,
not usually known for our speed. Nice to know we can do it in the speed golf world.
Yeah.
You
can go
place.
Look on YouTube, Christopher Smith speed golf Bandon Dunes. And he shot with this drone camera high-speed video. So it's only 3-minute watch. 4 under par in 53 minutes.
Okay, we got to go back to your
crazy
record. You and I are going to go off on a lot of tangents.
Yeah, yeah. So
the
next night I go over there and I run very fast and play a pretty good hole and I did a 2:12. And I'm like, wait, what's going on here? This is a legit record. I emailed the guy. I'm like, dude, are you an Olympic sprinter or something? Because how did you play that hole in 1:50? And I tried over and over again, running faster this time. And when I ran really fast, I'd hit a bad shot. And if you hit one bad shot, you're going in the bushes and your time's over. So this was like a 5-month project, an obsession that I am going to get this world record. And I'm going to optimize my approach in several different ways to try to chop time out of the video that I watched and studied. So one of the big optimizations was I got to learn how to hit every shot with a single club, because switching in and out of a bag, I mean, in a tournament, of course you need your wedge if you're in the sand and you need a putter to hit a nice putt in and a long club to hit off the tee. But I decided I'm going to take my 3-wood and I'm going to hit every shot with a 3-wood. So I'm going to tee off. I'm going to hit a long second shot. I'm going to hit this delicate chip shot with a 3-wood, get on the green and putt it in with a 3-wood. So that took months of practice to learn how to hit this 3-wood chip shot and then a bloody putt into the hole with a 3-wood. But if I didn't have to reach down and change clubs and all that, I realized I could chop a lot of time off the record. And then the other thing I had to learn was to like hit a golf shot while sprinting full speed. I'm full sprint, like I'm running a 400 meter race on the track, getting to the ball. And instead of waiting 4 to 5 to 7 seconds, like most speed golfers do, to just gather yourself, look at your target, take a deep breath, I would run up to the ball and just whack at it. Well, I could barely even see the ball because of the sweat dripping out of my eyes. But if I practiced that, and got lucky, things I could pull things together. So I attempted the record twice. Once was in Sacramento, and I did a minute 40. So I took 10 seconds off, and then 3 weeks later, I went down to L.A. for my Southern Cal fan club, because I'll tell you what the record guidelines are ridiculous, what they require. But then I did a minute 38. So that one's on YouTube because it was really a miracle because I scored a birdie in this minute 38 journey. So I birdied the hole with just a 3-wood sprinting full speed. I figure I've won some triathlons and I achieved a high level as a professional athlete, but this thing, when I finished it, it was over with so quickly. And I'm like, that has to be the greatest thing I've ever done. If I try it 100 times, I probably won't repeat a birdie at full breakneck speed with one club.
Okay. This people are listening to this are going, what does this record have to do with my life? But I'm going to tell you, we're going to take a quick break. The fact that you pursued this is indicative of everything else you've done before, because you have taken your past history as a competitive athlete and you have taken the lessons you learned doing that and applied them to so many other areas. So when we come back after this, I want to talk a little bit about the idea of getting big results when you figure out how to make your goals pure. It takes a special kind of person to do morning news, don't you think?
I think so.
And by special, I mean not right.
Yeah, there's definitely something crazy about all of us.
All of us. We love getting up in the middle of the night. We love starting the day really early. The news goes on at 4 a.m. now, 4 a.m. to 9 a.m. 5 hours of news.
It's a long time.
That is a very long time. You know how much time that is? 300 minutes.
That's a lot of minutes.
18,000 seconds.
That's a lot of seconds.
That's a lot of seconds. It's a lot of information.
Gonna start singing Rent right now?
I might. That is where I got the idea. That's a lot of news. That's a lot of weather. That's a lot of traffic. It's a lot of fun.
At 4 in the morning.
At 4 in the morning. And it all starts in the middle of the night. Join us. Everything that you do now in your life, to me, must have been influenced by your life as a professional athlete. You're a great runner, former triathlete, ranked, I think, number 3 in the world, if I remember right.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
So long
I've known
ago.
You a long time.
Amazing. Yeah. We have, yes. A great run in Sacramento.
Brag a little bit about where you all started with this, because you were a professional triathlete back in the 80s.
Sure. I mean, I started as a kid doing all the sports and loving it and just loved being outdoors and challenging my body. And I thought I was going to be a football star in high school when I went down there at 5'5" and 115 pounds and went to the first football practice. I decided to ask the coach where the cross country team was meeting. So that was the end of my football career when I saw how big these guys were
right.
coming out. And I made it to the state meet and the national junior Olympic finals as a runner and dreamed of a big career in college and went off to UC Santa Barbara Division I program. And I just got destroyed. I was sick and injured over and over. And it was just a tough time in my life because my identity was that of a runner. And then to go in there and have this repeated failure, I had to recalibrate and I found the wonderful sport of triathlon. And so that led me into a 9-year career where I raced on the professional circuit and had, at my best, I had those great successes. I was national champion, ranked 3rd in the world at my best season. But I also struggled and suffered so much and got discouraged and had to learn this powerful insight that I named my podcast, which is Get Over Yourself. And what that means is through this journey of competing in professional sports where you have the lessons of success and failure in a more dramatic manner than possibly anything else, you know, there's no faking it or kiss ass to the boss so that you can get a promotion. It's like you go out there, you race, you get your time, you realize that the winner makes 7 times as much money mm-hmm. as the 7th place finisher, even though he's only 18 seconds ahead, and you can go complain and tell a story, or you can kind of get over yourself and focus on the process, pick yourself up, dust yourself off after repeated failures. And I had to learn that my competitive intensity and that type A driven, focused competitive guy, I need to tone that person down and just be more embracing of the pure motivation for doing it, which was, I love being outdoors, pushing my body, I love competing, but not attaching my self-esteem to the result, to the outcome of what I was doing. And it's sort of, we don't really appreciate that enough, because we say these messages to our kids, and, oh, if you get good grades, you'll get into a good college, and then you'll get a good job, and then you'll make a lot of money, so don't get a B in that eighth grade English class, or your life will be destroyed. I mean, this is truly the message that's floating out there today. And in adult world, where we've succumbed to consumerism and hyperconnectivity and the competitive aspects of social media and calling attention to yourself and all those things. So, you know, the podcast is sort of a spicy name for me to say that out to other people. Yeah, it's called Get Over Yourself. But this is what I've been working on doing myself, because when I was able to do that as an athlete, that's when I tapped into my true center of power, where I loved what I was doing. I was competing without fear of failure, which is a big thing for an athlete to overcome. And I just got on the starting line and said, let's go, bring it on. I'm not afraid of anything. And I'm not also going to get discouraged or second guess myself or complain and tell a story after I finish. I'm just going to take the result for what it is, get back up and compete again with great competitive intensity.
It seems though that a lot of that was because you weren't just an athlete. Around that time, you also started writing. And a lot of athletes don't have that other thing. They don't have that plan past the finish line. But you were already starting to segue into a different career that has now followed you for a long time. So you started writing about health and fitness and that link between having that pure goal and the brain and the power of all those things combining.
Yeah, I think that's an important element, is having that balanced perspective in life and having hobbies and friends outside of this, you know, all-consuming sport, because the training was so arduous. It took all day to train. And so I was either eating or sleeping or training during that 9-year period when I was a professional triathlete. I actually slept 12 hours a day. I took a 10-hour stint every night and then a 2-hour nap every afternoon. And if I missed my nap, if the line was too long at the DMV, I was cranky and frustrated, and I'd go to the swimming pool and my workout would be not quite on because I didn't get my nap. So I was asleep for half of my life. So it was a completely self-absorbing pursuit to be an athlete. And you have to work to balance that and to make sure that you don't lose perspective. Everything seems so important when I was an athlete. And now it's like all my race results are in a brown folder in the back of my file cabinet. My defining purpose in life is now completely insignificant, except for the lessons that I can take forward and the importance of getting over myself and working on that every single day.
You became one of the big names in the paleo movement a few years back with Mark Sassone. Talk a little bit about how the two of you guys met and then how you became writing partners with him.
Oh, well, Mark was my coach back when I was an athlete, and he was preceded me. He's older than me, so he was a national caliber marathon runner. He ran a 2:18, qualified for the Olympic trials, was fourth in the Hawaii Ironman back in the day. So when I was coming up in the pro ranks, we were both in LA, and we had a great relationship, coach and athlete, and he taught me so many evolved perspectives that were years ahead of his time about balancing the stress and rest of training, doing breakthrough workouts, not obsessing about your mileage and getting broken down and into chronic patterns. So we've kept in touch for all those years, and then 10 years ago, we started on this crazy journey to promote the Primal Blueprint movement, the Primal Paleo living, and it's become really popular. It's nice to see it kind of tap into the mainstream, where if you're on an airplane flight and you say, I'm into that paleo thing, you know about that? And the person nods, oh, sure, because 10 years ago, I mean, we were getting turned down by publishers and TV opportunities because people thought this was crazy stuff. What do you mean you're supposed to eat fat and grains are bad for you? And all these things that are now kind of coming into consciousness and scientific validation, too.
These books, though, they're huge. I mean, you're very humble, but these books, you've sold a lot of books.
Yeah, the last book we wrote was The Keto Reset Diet. And Mark Sisson, if you don't know him, is considered maybe the founding father of the Primal Paleo movement with a couple other leaders, but he's the most prominent name in that scene. So to be able to write with him is a great privilege. And this one made New York Times bestseller list. So keto is obviously super popular. That's the ketogenic diet. And it's just the ultimate level of sophistication of low-carb or primal paleo eating, is to get into this ketogenic state and avail yourself to all these incredible metabolic benefits. this, but what I see now with like the incredible popularity and the craze of keto is it's getting misinterpreted, severely criticized by people that don't see the whole big picture. And, you know, it's seen as like the bacon and butter diet where you stuff your face with fat and then you make these ketones and everything's wonderful and you lose weight. And it's like, whoa, where did we ever say that? Let me look at my book. It's right here. It's 326 pages. We didn't say stuff your face with fat to be healthy.
We have a couple of people here who are doing it, and I see them walking around with bags of pork rinds, open bags of pork rinds. Like they circle the hallways eating pork rinds.
You can smell them coming from.
Yes, you can. You can. I'm guessing there's more to it than that too.
Yeah, and we're not going to go deep into this, but it's all about escaping from this disastrous state of carbohydrate dependency, which we're in because we eat the standard American high carbohydrate, high insulin producing diet. And this is now known to be extremely unhealthy and leading to cancer, heart disease, obesity, type 2 diabetes, lifelong accumulation of excess body fat because we're eating these regular meals. And breakfast is so important. We got to stuff our face with orange juice, toast, and oatmeal and start burning these calories and balance our blood sugar. And all these things are completely disrespecting our ancestral background as hunter-gatherers eating for 2.5 million years a diet of natural, wholesome, healthy foods, including a lot of plants. And it's not, much love and respect to the plant-based community and all that emphasis on that. But we've also thrived on nutrient-dense animal food. So you're putting kind of this hunter-gatherer diet into modern life. And there's, you know, I'm looking for common ground and I don't want your next guest to dispute everything I say. So I'm like, look, eat healthy, wholesome foods that are colorful, nutrient dense, and get rid of the crap that's causing health problems, right? Sugars, grains, the Starbucks drinks that are 760 calories that you suck down without even noticing that anything went into your stomach. Sorry, this episode is not sponsored by Starbucks, but future ones might be.
Not anymore.
There goes. Let's take another commercial break to appease our sponsors that I just called out.
Yeah. What do you like about writing?
Oh, man.
You've written a lot of books.
First of all, I like facing a true professional journalist that asks those penetrating questions that take me away. It's not on my 3x5 note card. How do I answer that? What do I like about writing?
Let me flip it. What do you hate about writing? That's usually easier for a writer to answer.
What I hate is today's world, like we were talking about offline, is that we are being programmed for distractibility, tech addiction, and short sound bites and lowest common denominator entertainment options. And that's the opposite of writing a book. So I am highly sensitive to my propensity to be distracted, and I'm fighting against that because 20 years ago when I wrote my first book, there was no internet connection. And then soon you had to click the button and have the dial thing. Young listeners won't know what I'm talking about.
No,
older ones
no,
will.
No, has no idea
but
what you're talking
everything
about.
Was more, everything was more mindful. And now, what I love about writing is going into a parking lot where there's no internet connection, and that's where I get my best writing done. And it's sort of a disgrace to say that I'm that pathetic that I can't, you know, have my cup of coffee at my desk overlooking the Sacramento River and sit down and write for 4 hours every morning and then go for a jog and then write for 3 more hours. I can't do it. It's really difficult for me. So I like to go and put myself into like uncomfortable situations where I'm in a hot parking lot with my laptop sitting in the passenger seat, and then I let it flow. And I love that experience of, it's like solving a puzzle to me, where I'll spew out something or have a notepad with my ideas, and then you have to put the pieces together and make something that's, you know, cogent and will entertain the reader. See, I'm already distracted by multimedia today.
So
that's a fun challenge. Oh my gosh, it's like, you know, close to 20. On that list are some that you've never heard of and no one's ever read. And talk about being committed to the process to write a book and not get it published and have it sit there and get buried as a project, whatever was going on. But, you know, the journey of writing it was the best part. So when I write a book or finish a book and click that send button and send it off to our publishers in New York City, Harmony Books, love you, man. Get it out there to all the bookstores in the world. But if no one ever reads it, it's still a tremendously satisfying journey to write a book and finish it. And yeah, I'd love for people to read it. That's the intent. But it's not what I'm going for. It's not what I'm all about.
I mean, that goes back to your concept of have a pure goal, because it is very distracting. And if you said it's only going to be a success if this many people buy it, that's a really hard thing to live with all the time.
Yeah, and I hear people struggle with motivation in any career. And so I feel like I don't have any problem there, because if I don't write this book, it's not going to get written, or someone else is going to do it and they're going to do a worse job than I. And so I'm compelled. It's like my purpose is to get this into book form, because we're fighting against some evil forces in the terms of healthy eating, right? And those concepts or training principles that are ridiculous and will bury you if you go listen to what XYZ personal trainer says or some magazine article that's not well informed. So I'm going to try to correct that course and come in hard with a really emphatic writing style where I look at the Amazon reviews and I say, yeah, the guy was kind of repetitive at times. I'm like, yeah, I'm repetitive because I got to slam it through your thick head, because in terms of an endurance athlete, they're not going to listen when you say, slow down, lower your heart rate, and you will run a faster marathon because you're taking care of your body and you're building your aerobic energy systems and fat burning enzymes better than constantly pushing yourself a little too hard and being a sugar burning athlete that's going to bonk at mile 20. So those things, man, I have a lot of passion coming out because I feel like I can improve and change your life if you embrace these ideas that I'm presenting.
You wrote a book years ago. You did a couple of biographies. One was called How Lance Did It. The second one was How Tiger Did It. Now, in retrospect, we know how they did it.
The timing was interesting because the Lance book came out when he was the 7-time Tour de France champion. And I know Lance for a long time, and we go back to triathlon days. And I admire him greatly as a person who's a peak performer at the highest level. He's one of the greatest endurance athletes of all time. As I've spoken about before, this doping thing, the fact that it all got blown up and we realized that everyone was doping, I hope some listeners can see him in a different light. I think he handled everything extremely poorly, and the lawsuits against the people that bravely came out to tell the truth, that was ridiculous. But in terms of his athletic ability and his peak performance attributes, great stuff. And he's changed my life with a few offhanded comments that I'll never forget that, you know, really taught me how to avoid getting into that self-pitying mode and taking responsibility and being accountable as a competitor. So I wrote that book, and then the bus came out a couple of years later. But then meanwhile, I was writing a book about Tiger, and then a couple of years later, he had this incredible downfall. So favorite line from my publisher called me up and he said, okay, Brad, who's next? After it was like the day after the Thanksgiving incident with Tiger Woods. Yeah. Who are you thinking about now? Who's in your crosshair, so to speak?
When we come back, I want to talk about what makes some people better at executing things than others. There's some people who, like you, are kind of wired to just go all at something. And then there are some other people who have really great ideas, but it's really hard to pull things off. So we'll talk about execution, risk, not being afraid to fail, and what happens when your goals are pure. Jeff, did you know that KCRA3's Leticia Ordaz likes musicals?
I did not know that.
You know how I knew that?
How do you know that?
KCRA app, what? News team bios. It's one of the fun features you'll find on the app in addition to your news, your weather. I know you love the weather.
Weather's very important.
Super important to Jeff. He needs to know what to wear in the morning. Sartorial splendor, that is his thing. KCRA app, it is free. It's like having KCRA in your pocket. And if you enable those push notifications, you find out breaking news as we know it.
That sounds great.
Well, go get it.
I will.
So going back to the speed golf record, I mean, really, it's symbolic of a lot of things that you talk about in your podcast. And the big thing is you've always got to have a goal, whether it's athletic or something else. You have to have something that you're working toward.
Right. The speed golf single hole Guinness World Record is a silly little folly, especially for a guy who raced for a living in front of big crowds on ESPN. And was, you know, my income and my career prospects were all tied into this big, super important thing of being a triathlete. And now I'm 53 years old. I'm an old has-been. I can tell you stories about my great races, but I don't think it's that important. But what is important is to maintain this competitive edge, this competitive intensity throughout life. Because I feel like now, today, we have the opportunity for the first time to just sit back and consume entertainment with all our spare time and basically never push or challenge ourselves outside of our comfort zones to do something special. So I saw this as an opportunity to kind of gear up a little bit and go and actually practice and train for a specific attempt where there's a lot of pressure. I mean, that day when I orchestrated the record attempt, because I didn't tell you this, the Guinness requirements, you have to have 12 people there. two of them have to be like random people you didn't know because we don't want people that are biased. So I had to go track down these witnesses that knew about golf, rally my family and friends. My girlfriend's sister and her husband drove 3 hours from Reading to come down to Bing Maloney to watch this record that's going to take, you know, a minute something. So I felt the pressure just as I did when I was traveling across the world and racing a big race in Australia on the professional circuit. So it was a really cool feeling to have those butterflies in my stomach and realize that even though this is for fun and games and no one was going to write me a big giant check at the finish green, it was important to me in that sense that I was pushing myself and challenging myself to a peak performance goal.
What's the lesson then for others who maybe they don't want to be a speed golfer? Maybe. What's the lesson that everybody can get out of that?
Oh my gosh, you know, find something that's interesting to you, that's a challenge. And you made me bring my books and I'm looking at these stack of books. I'm like, wow, I wrote those. I can't believe it. But, you know, it was a daunting challenge and I completed it and it felt good to do it just so I can sit there and look at something I did. And it could be write your first poem or do a clay sculpture. I also like clay sculpturing little dogs. I'm really good at it because that's all I do is dogs. And I've done like 20 bad ones that live in the garden outside. But then I have a couple where I just nailed my dog. My dog posed for me and I sat there. Another silly thing, but just something that's a peak performance goal that you actually prepare for and take it seriously. But of course, place it in context of a healthy, balanced life. So today, I don't think it would be a good idea for Brad Kearns to go back and do a triathlon and sleep for 12 hours every day just because I want to be a has-been, you know, kicking around at something that I've been there and done that. But the speed golf record to me symbolized something that was new, it was fresh, it was a challenge. And hey, here's a world record on the board. I think I can do it, but it takes a lot of work and preparation and focus. And all those things are wonderful sensations that make us better people, but they're very easily suppressed today when we have all the temptations to consume too much food and watch too much TV and sit around and spend our entire day watching people slam into each other on the NFL. I got to give a shout out to this thing that's got to go away in the next 15 or 20 years because these guys are sacrificing too much. And we're sitting here like gladiator age watching them for our entertainment. Instead, go out there and do a sport of yourself. Go kick the soccer ball around in the park. Even if you're no good, make a miniature field and only play for 15 minutes, but you're taking something and you're putting yourself out there for a challenge.
So what do you want to do next?
I like
this
podcast.
This is the first time you've been quiet this entire podcast. Yeah.
Hold on. Let me take a sip of this nice red wine that you poured.
Yeah. That's what we do.
You know, Deirdre, I love the podcast thing. I'm so excited that you guys are doing this too. I think it's the great emerging media because we can consume it in a manner that doesn't demand our full attention. So we can commute or we can go on a jog or rake the leaves and listen to a podcast. And I think it's the best way and easiest way for an expert to dispense their information. So if we sat down and you wanted to talk about the keto reset diet for about an hour and 20 minutes, I could tell you everything you need to know in that book that took me a year to write. So the advancement of culture and the advancement of knowledge can happen really, really quickly through this medium, unlike the old days where we had to, you know, print a bunch of books and mail them in the mail and you get it and you read it. And that's what's cool is things are moving really fast. I know there's a lot of content out there, but not as quality as yours. So I encourage people to keep listening. And that's another plug for dying to ask.
We appreciate that.
Brent, and Get Over Yourself's pretty fun too. So go look at that podcast if you.
I was just going to say, how do we, as we start to wrap things up, how do we keep up with you?
Oh, you can look at Brad.
You're not going to keep up with him on the golf course, so don't even try that. But how do we keep up with you online?
That would be a true statement. If you want to try that, I'll take you out there and we can try speed golf sometime. If you see me running around, just yell and I'll introduce you to the sport. It's really simple. You can look at bradkearns.com. I got my picture of the Guinness World Record on there and it's all dressed up and you can consume all the podcasts there and find it wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
All right, Brad, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brad Kearns is all kinds of energy.
Oh, man.
He looked a little tired at the end of that interview.
There's a lot to take in.
There is a lot to take in, but I love his excitement for life in general.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that idea of challenging yourself and finding those new challenges and those goals and pursuing it. So it made me think, like, what could you and I do as a Guinness World Record? It's not speed golf. That I'm sure of. But I looked up the record for the longest career in TV news as a broadcaster.
Wow.
Just set this year. You want to guess how long?
55 years.
51 years.
Oh.
Don Alhart of WHAM-TV in Rochester, New York, who's on the air when I was a kid growing up in Rochester, New York, just set this record just earlier this year for 51 years.
Wow. I guess if you love what you do.
Yeah, that's a long, long time. I'm nowhere close to 51 years. Feels like it sometimes, but I don't see that happening for me. So we'll have to keep looking.
Yeah.
Congrats, Don.
We'll find something.
Congrats, Brad. We'll find something. We always do. All right. Thanks to everybody who's been listening to the podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at RunReadSip. You'll follow Jeff.
At Producer Jeff.
On Instagram. On Facebook, you can find me at KCRA Deirdre. On Twitter at KCRA Fitz. And thank you for those awesome reviews that have been coming in. If you want to rate us, Jeff's favorite number is 5. That's the one he likes to see. And any of the kind comments you've been leaving on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, we read them.
Yeah.
I text them. I'm like, we got another one.
They're great.
Super fun. And they're really important because it helps us grow the podcast. So thanks so much. And I have one more request. I would love people to screen grab where they're listening. Wouldn't that be fun?
That'd be so cool.
I want to know where you're listening to our podcast and what you're doing. So if you will do that and send them to us on Instagram, we will share them as well.
Do you think the Canadians are doing the curling?
Oh my gosh, I hope they are.
That'd be great.
Yes, we love our Canadian listeners. Both of you. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you again next week.
Bye.